The text to which I direct your thoughts this evening is to be found in that chapter which I read a moment ago, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, and the 10th verse. Do not say, "Why were the former days better than these?" For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Now and again, I'm sure that each and every one of us feels the need to apply our minds to something very serious. Today there's a great deal of levity and triviality and superficiality. And so our interest is drawn and directed to what is deeper, that we might be stimulated in our minds. And hence, in recent days, I have decided that I will read a work in order that I might be better enlightened. It's called The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And you may or may not have come across it, but it can be quite enlightening and quite stimulating. And there happen to be a series of these books that are available for those of a certain age or state of mind. And I may not belong to that particular age group, but maybe the state of mind might well be one that I am sort of drawn to in certain respects. In the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and part of the series which this book belongs to, is titled Old School. And the whinging youngster, because youngsters do tend to whinge on occasions, and he writes in his daily journal and says something like this: "Grown-ups are always talking about the good old days and how things were so much better when they were kids." Have you ever heard it? Dad and Mom, in our day, we did it this way. In our day, we didn't need this. In our day, we made our own fun. We didn't have to have all these gadgets and gimmicks. And if that's not bad enough, with Dad and Mom telling us about their days, if Grandpa and Grandma are still surviving, then they come in and they will tell us that the days were even better when they were alive and they were growing up. In the book, there happens to be a cartoon of a father who is sitting in the lounge room, and he is shaken with the antics of several of his children. One happens to be bouncing on a pogo stick. Another is wearing a jetpack, and he is flying between the floor and the ceiling. And a third is sitting at the controls of some mobile four-legged creature stalking through the room. And the father from his seat ironically says, "When I was your age, we used our legs for getting around. But now it's skateboards, if it's not roller skates, and something else of that particular nature. But in our day, we used what we were born with. We were using our legs." And so often the reference is made to the good old days. And between them and now, we have what is referred to as the generation gap. So the times have changed, and the old school, Dad and Mom and Grandpa and Grandma, they do battle with the new school, the youngsters of this generation, who at times possibly feel more enlightened, or that the parents, at least, are benighted, and they really just haven't got an idea. They haven't got their finger upon the pulse of things, and parents themselves, well, you listen to them, but we don't really pay too much attention to them. The old look back and yearn for yesterday, and the young sometimes look back and say, "Yuck." At least some of them do, and are very thankful that they don't live in those so-called good old days. Well, the writer in the book of Ecclesiastes, he issues this rebuke to those that have a tendency to look back. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. Because one thing you haven't learned if you pose that kind of question and you have that mindset, one thing you haven't learned, even from the book of Ecclesiastes, is this, that there is nothing new under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. In some ways, superficially, on the surface, yes, things appear to be changing. But in actual fact, at heart, things remain the same. So I want to just consider this text before us, and I want to begin by looking at the past nostalgically. We tend to do that, older people do. We romanticize the past. We imagine it to be so much better than now. And very often it is our pride and our prejudice which keep company with nostalgia. So we can imagine these triplets, as it were, spending time together. And here is pride, and here is prejudice. And along in the midst of them is this nostalgia. And we look back to yesterday. And nostalgia looks through dewy eyes at some imagined glorious past and idolizes it. Why were the former days better than these? Why do we think yesterday was better than today? Someone asked, is it not the ordinary habit of the old men of the generation to give undue worth and weight to the records of bygone days? And what we do is we flip through the pages of history, or we buy a DVD or borrow it from the local library about yesterday. And suddenly there is a picture that is beginning to form in our minds of what it would have been like to live in the 18th century, the 17th century, maybe in the days of the Lord himself or even prior to that. And we imagine certain scenes. And we think it would have been an exciting time and a glorious time to live. In the days of Ezra, when there was the rebuilding of the house of God, we are told this in the book of Ezra. Old men who had seen the first house wept with a loud voice. What did they do? They wept with joy. They wept when they saw the foundations of this house being laid, though many shouted with joy. They wept because it was nothing like yesterday. It was nothing like the former house, which they remembered. And they were comparing the one with the other. There were some that rejoiced, but a lot of the old men, they were in tears. It was so much better in our day. Haggai the prophet, he puts the question to an older generation. Who is left among you who saw the house in its former glory? How would you see it now? It is as nothing in your eyes. You old men, you're whinging, you're complaining, you're murmuring, you're contrasting today with yesterday, and the house of the day is as nothing to you compared with yesterday. And there's a sense in which you are longing for the good old days. If only we could recall them. The dying generation sees what? Degeneracy in the present generation. But have things really changed? We read in the Word of God in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 9, what has been will be. What has been yesterday will be. And what has been done yesterday is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. That which is already has been. So that which is to be already has been. So we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 15. There's a cycle of events. There's a repetition of what has been, and it comes back again and again and again. Yes, maybe this is the age of science and the age of technology. And so there are different things that are now given to us or available to us, which our forebears did not have. But essentially, the heart of man is very much the same. And there's nothing that really satisfies. Nothing but God himself. And so we are faced with these problems. One of the problems is that we idealize the past. That is, almost as if Dickens was speaking, he would say, that was the best of times. Looking back to the past, we idealize it. Do you remember those days of yesterday when we were free, when we were at liberty, when we could do almost whatever we want to do, we could just go here and there, and kids were free to wander. Yes, it's true, there is a limitation now, and liberty is somewhat infringed. The days when we could walk over the hills, the days when we could be on our own, walking alongside the river, little tots, as it were, and just enjoying the freedom of the open air, the expanse of the countryside, and without the industrialized sort of towns and the city smoke and the automobiles, etc. There's a sense in which, yes, you can make contrasts and comparisons, and this is better than that. But we idealize it because we are selective in what we want to see, and that which is not so pleasant, we put it out of our mind, and it doesn't come into the picture. So the picture is doctored, rather like they doctor pictures when they want to put something into a newspaper in the interest of propaganda. And so you see through the camera what the cameraman wants you to see, but you don't see what is around it. And so we have an idealized picture. Not only is it idealized yesterday, but it's idolized. We worship it. And those in our circles who subscribe to a particular system of belief, then we tend to idolize the Reformation. Or we idolize the period of the Puritans and of the 18th century leaders. We idolize this as if nothing afterwards can come which can measure up to the giants of yesterday, whether it happens to be Martin Luther or John Calvin or any of those in the 18th century, such as Jonathan Edwards and George Whitefield, as if somehow God has totally abandoned his people and that he has not a company who we will raise up in future days who will be mighty in word and in deed. And so we tend to have a pessimistic view of what is to come because our hearts are way back in the 17th century or the 16th century or the 18th, maybe 19th even to some extent, particularly, because these are the ages that we particularly are attracted to, and our books that we have on our shelves, whatever books you may have, they are written in that particular period, and they are the mighty stalwarts of the Protestant faith at that particular time. We idolize it, and we're in danger in doing so. It's almost as if these men were not men of flesh as we are, as if they had no infirmities, as if they had no clay feet whatsoever. But in fact, they did. You read sometimes the biographies of these men, sometimes women, and those who are particularly taken with these persons whom they are writing about are selective in their choice of what they are going to present in the book, so that you come away feeling that these men were indeed in the highest heaven. And indeed, I have no doubt they aspired to be there. But it's almost as if there is nothing, no spot, no wrinkle, no crease within their life at all. No sins. We idolize it. And therefore, we are in danger of failing to present always the truth with regards to people and to events and to insolence. We need to be very careful. And we need to believe in a God who is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, yes. He is the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And he is the God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And that he has got his instruments and his ambassadors waiting in the wings, who he will summon and whom he will call and whom he will equip, even in this 21st century, to be men and women who are mighty for God and who will be pioneers in once again presenting the grand and glorious truths for which many of our forebears, our forefathers, did die and give their lives. Our problem very often is the problem of pride. And the problem with this backward-looking spirit is indeed pride and prejudice. The sense that we in the past, or others in the past, were better. And in some ways they were. But we have to remember that the sins of the fathers and their consequences are borne by this generation. The sins of the fathers, the sins of yesterday, which our fathers committed, and they have fallen unto the children of the second and the third generation. Yesterday was not so wonderful at times as we may think. Do not think that yesterday was better. Again, we are to look at the day in which we are living critically, but we are to look at yesterday critically as well. That wimpy kid in the book that I referred to at the outset happens to mention his mother. He says this: Mom says the problem with society these days is that everybody's got their nose in a screen and nobody takes time to get to know the people who live around them. Well, there is something to be said for that. Have you noticed? People can't get away from their smartphones. It's almost as if they were born with them, and it's almost as if they could not ever live without them. They're lost without these things. There's a great advantage in having them. They are useful, there's no doubt, but they have begun to master us, and we have failed to master it. We have become slaves to these things. We're in bondage to them. Whenever there's a little tinkle, we have to run. And we have to pick up the phone. We have to be looking at the screen. We have to be reading this or listening to that, etc. It's true. Or it's the iPad. Or it's the television. Maybe some of the adults don't have smartphones, don't even know how to use them. But hey, they're glued to the television. And it's the screen at the cinema, and it's the screens that we have all before us. And these things certainly dominate our life and dictate what we do, and they determine how social we are. We are social at the level of interaction with, or a conversation with, through messaging or through the phone, but not so much in a kind of face-to-face way. And there's a great element of discourtesy anyway with the phone. You may be present, but hey, it's the phone which somehow grabs the attention of the individual who must answer it, who must respond to it, and you've got to wait until that person has finished. So Mom says the problem with society these days is that everybody's got their nose in a screen and nobody takes time to get to know the people who live around them. A sort of antisocial aspect. Was it better in the old days? Has anybody ever heard the song Cats in the Cradle? It's about yesterday. And it's not about somebody with a smartphone or an iPad. It's about a father and a son. My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking before I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, "I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you." and the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I've got a lot to do. And he said, that's okay. And he walked away. But his smile never dimmed. Said, I'm going to be like him. That's Dad. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. When are you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. We'll be home from college. Well, he came home from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? And he, the son, shook his head. And he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later. Can I have them, please? And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired and my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day and I said, I'd like to see you, if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids got the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me, and the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, the little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know, we'll have a good time then. That was yesterday. No smartphone, no iPad, nothing of that nature. Have things changed? Even yesterday, there was the lack of communication of Dad and a son. A son, I haven't got time. I've got a lot to do. There's this, there's that. But hey, you know, we'll find time maybe when I come back. And so it goes on through the early days of life, the early years until adolescence, till the things were changed around. And the son graduates from college. And the father now, in his older age, he's wanting to spend time with his son. And the son says, I haven't got time. He's got his excuses. So there's a lack of communication way back then, yesterday, without all the gimmicks and without all the gadgets that now we have today. And we have a tendency to accuse people who have them as being sort of antisocial, out of touch, and not really having that sort of interaction and communication like we did in the good old days. Well, in the good old days, husbands and fathers sometimes left their wives and left their households. They just walked out. They walked away. They couldn't handle it anymore in the good old days. Read in the book, The Wimpy Kid. Lately, mom's been going around town with a petition to get people to stop using their phones and electronic gadgets for 48 hours. And on this sort of little pamphlet that she's throwing around, she says, let's unplug to reconnect. And it seems we are in danger of a personal disconnect with others socially. Nowadays, we can shop online without entering a store. We can buy groceries online and get them delivered. We can bank online and never meet your local friendly teller. There is a disconnect in our society, that's true. And spiritually, likewise. The electronic church can lock into its favorite preacher if you're a member of the electronic church. You can pick and choose the topic and the theme that you want to listen to on a Sunday evening. You can choose what day of the week and hour the household family will worship without dragging dozy, cranky kids to church on a Sunday morning. There's no fellowship as such. There are no shepherds to submit to. That's good. There are no oddballs in the congregation to sit next to. No commitment, no covenants, no test of love, no peace, really. Or no grace, sorry. We just simply have our own little get-together when we can download our favorite preacher. And at the same time, we can go get ourselves a Coke from the fridge. And we can have a bite and a few nibbles as we're sitting there listening to the favorite preacher. This is the electronic church. Now, Mom is not entirely wrong. She says when she was younger, it was great because everybody in town knew everybody and it was like one giant family. Remember the good old days when everybody knew everybody? You bet. And they knew everybody about, knew everything about you. Do you know what was found in the family of yesterday? Busybodies, talebearers, gossips, prattlers, meddlers, whisperers. And in those good old days, they had their phones running hot on the latest juicy bit of news. Have you heard? Don't say anything to anybody, will you? Just keep this to yourself, won't you? Have you heard? Guess what's the latest? You won't believe it. Down goes the phone. Dial. Oh, look, I've just got something to tell you. Don't tell anybody, will you? But this is the latest. Have you heard? You know, the grapevine. You know. When you were younger, everybody knew everybody. And everybody knew everything about you. Yesterday. Were the good old days really better? Do you want to live in that kind of community? Do you really want to live in that kind of gossiping society? In the good old days, they may not have their nose to a screen, but they had their noses elsewhere. And do you know what they were called? Nosy Parkers. Nosy Parkers. Furthermore, in those far-off good old days, many were too busy to connect with their children. And we have to thank God indeed for advances made in technology, which have enabled us to connect to many with the news of the gospel. We don't live in those days in the past. There's many things about them which are indeed precious and are to be valued. There's no doubt about it. But don't think that necessarily those days were better days. And we live in the days of technology. And thank God for that. We thank God for the Gutenberg Press, all right, which came to be before the Reformation in 1517 under Martin Luther. What a great thing that was. We thank God for radio, for recordings, for DVDs. And we thank God for smartphones. How many there are in certain parts of the world today where they have no access to a missionary and no missionary has an access to them. But through the modern means of technology, the gospel is being communicated and transcends the natural boundaries of vast mountain ranges, of fast flowing rivers, of deserts. And where there is a state prohibition that nobody can enter this country who is a missionary or anything like that, the gospel on the airwaves is being presented to a multitude of people who in the secret of their own homes or in some other place are listening to the word of God. Something which could not be done yesterday, but which is being done today. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? Be thankful to God for the day in which you live. The day of advancement scientifically and technologically and in other ways also, where we have the means to be able to propagate and to publish the gospel through publishing presses and in other respects in a way that was unknown to our forebears and to our forefathers. We thank God for them. Because they have shown us what it means to take the gospel and to sacrifice, if that is the right word to use, I don't know that it is, but certainly to serve the cause of Jesus Christ, even if it meant losing my life or losing the kind of life that I have lived before. And they are forever models to us of dedication and commitment to the cause of the Lord Jesus. So we look back to yesterday and we see these men and these women and what they were prepared to do in the interests of the gospel, in many respects, how much better they were than us, who've got so much more than they ever had. And yet we sit, as it were, in comfort, and we do so very little in comparison to these men and women of the past who suffered and who gave their lives in the cause of Jesus Christ. When we talk about the good old days, maybe that's an indication of discontent within our own hearts. Do you remember these words of the Apostle Paul, which I'm sure you do, as they are found in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11 and verse 12. Philippians 4, verse 11 and verse 12. Not that I speak in regard to need, writes Paul, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Are we content with where God has placed us? Are we content with the period in history to which He has brought us? Are we content with His particular pleasure in calling us to serve Him in this generation? So often we are not settled because we are left with an impression that it was better to live in other times. And we still hanker for the times of our youth, or the times of our parents, or the times of our grandparents. And we look back nostalgically, and indeed in many respects, understandably, because there's so much about it that is good. I still recall the savor and the flavor and the fragrance of my grandmother's kitchen. Nothing like it. The way she cooked, the bread she baked, the aroma. Do I miss it? You bet I do. I do miss it. And I don't think there has been anything to compare with it today. There's a sense in which there is something better about yesterday. But not all of it is as good as we might tend to think. Sometimes we bring into question our belief in the providence of God, who appoints for us our times and accompanying conditions and circumstances. Was it better to live in the days of candles and laughing gas? The house in which my grandparents on my mother's side lived was in the Midlands of England, the very center, the very heart of the country. It was a place known as Great Packington. And that's where I spent holidays. And if I recall anything, it's the time of holiday there where my grandparents were, and my uncle and my aunt and my one cousin, who was killed in a car crash in France when he was about 27, 28 years of age. But I remember those times when we would go there, and it was a dead end. There was nothing beyond that road which led up to the farmstead, as it were, and a house, in my uncle's case, which was from the 14th century, and then my grandparents across the way. And it's kind of one of these houses where everything was never sort of straight or rectangular or square or whatever. It was all up and down, etc. You had to bend your head. You climbed steps and stairs, and doors creaked. And at night time, you know, there was no light, no electric light. It was just candles. And you climb upstairs with a candle, and you know something of the shadows that are on the wall behind you and alongside of you. It was one of those places where when the wind blew, you know, you wondered who it was walking on the tiles above your head. And the window began to rattle, etc. That was where you had a pump, and you pumped water, and the water came out. That was outside of the house, not inside the house. And I do remember those times. But you know, I'm so used to the flick of a switch right now, I'm not quite sure that I want to spend my time trying to strike a match and try and light a candle. Or use oil heaters. Was it better in those days when you had to go to the dentist and he administered to you laughing gas? I had it done to me several times. I never laughed. And they called it laughing gas. And gradually you would hear in the distance, Richard, 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 as they tried to arouse you and to awaken you from that depth into which you had been cast those good old days. And when they pulled the teeth before that, thankfully before that, with pliers under anesthetic, that was no laughing matter. The good old days. Amputation was the most commonly performed surgery. Since there was no consideration for sterilization or cleanliness, surgery was often fatal. Anesthesia, not a girl, anesthesia would either be applying a rag with chloroform to the patient's mouth. You know, you'd be struggling, but somebody would be holding you down, maybe, and apply this rag to the nose or to the mouth, giving the patient a bit of booze also to help deaden the pain. The surgeon would then use a tourniquet on the limb being amputated, and a scalpel would be used to cut through the skin and outer tissue, and a saw would then be used to get through the bone. Not one of these electric saws, which would do the job quickly, but, you know, one of these saws which would be sharpened, and they would try to get through the bone. That's the good old days. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. And there's a sort of an unrealistic spirit which exaggerates very often the past, exaggerates the evils of the past, maybe, and romanticizes the past. In this Wimpy Kid's journal, the kid writes, Grandpa says that when he was young, they didn't have televisions or anything like that, so kids spent most of their time outdoors playing games like Kick the Can. Remember those days? Those were the days when the bombs were falling all over England. We would have hoops that we would roll down the road and bat and ball and that kind of stuff. That's true. Those are the good old days. They were the good old days when incendiary bombs fell near our house. Those were the good old days. Those were the good old days when my parents pitched a tent in the field one evening to escape the bombing over Bristol in Somerset. And it so happened that the German plane that was going home decided to drop incendiary bombs in the field where the tent itself had been pitched. And my father apparently moved at great speed in order to make sure that his family would be protected and that, they would not be affected by these bombs that were dropping all around us. Those were the good old days. Those were the good old days when, not so very far from where we lived, in what is known as Cheddar Gorge, you've heard of cheddar cheese, or Cheddar Gorge, and there were several caves, and there were those occasional nights when, with other families, we would sleep in the caves in the good old days during the time of war. Those were the best days. I mean, really, nothing goes on in Thornley very much. Kind of pales into insignificance in comparison to the excitement of those days when bombs were dropping over England. And I always remember even the silver big barrage balloons there suspended in the sky in the hope that they would stop German planes. Those were the good old days. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? Those are the good old days when 6 million Jews in Auschwitz and Belsen and other places were put to death. 1939 September to 1945. The good old days. Having said all that, young people, be careful about criticizing yesterday. You're here because of yesterday. Ask your dad and mom. You have roots. You have entered into a heritage, not of your own making. You've had things offered to you, in many respects, on a silver plate. I know that some of the men who I was familiar with in Wangaroo, their men, some of them came from South Australia. And those men lived in tents. And they cleared the land of all the trees that were there at that particular time. That it would become a place for sheep and a place for the growing of corn, of wheat and barley and oats and so on. And they came and they lived with their wives there. And they worked from dawn until dusk. And then they had children. And when the children were born, there were the fields ripe with grain. There were the sheep grazing in the paddocks. Why? Because their fathers with an axe cut down the trees. The good old days. But those young men and young women entered into the fruit of those days when their parents labored so much, so that they were able to have a different beginning in life to that of their parents. Do not criticize too quickly those older days. Finally, I think as we look at this, it means that we look to the future. But there are those who are always looking back to the past, who look to the future with alarm. And they think that the days are getting worse, not better. And this better day mindset is often filled with pride and prejudice and a degree of pessimism. If you prefer the past, and you prefer the horse and buggy stage, then I suggest you go and live with the Amish, if that's what you prefer. I myself will go for a McLaren 570 GT. That's my dream. Basically perfect. It comes with a 562 horsepower, 3.8 liter twin turbo V8 engine that will hit 62 miles per hour in 3.4 seconds. The 7-speed dual clutch transmission and rear wheel drive act together with the synchronicity of a symphony. You can buy the horse and the buggy if you want to and go back to the good old days. But I kind of like the thought maybe of a few horses under the bonnet and being able to go at speed. Today we live at a time when organs can be grown, heart and kidneys. Even robots are helping the aged and sick with physical tasks. Does that sound too bad? When stem cell therapy could restore sight and neural damage, this is the future. This is what lies ahead, God willing. So the days to come are not necessarily as bad as we may think that they are. There are alarms about the future, spiritually, morally, and socially, but that has always been the state of mankind. The world was not a kind of place to live in the time of Noah. It was a time of violence, and God brought a great flood upon the earth. It was a violent time when Jesus was put to death on the cross. It was a violent time when the Mongols terrified the nations, these little people on little horses, establishing one of the greatest empires that ever existed in the world. The future is not quite as we imagine it's going to be. But those who look back to the past, they look ahead to the future with pessimism. And they think that things are getting worse. In some ways they are. What are we to do at this time? Well, first of all, do not say, why were the former days better than these? Furthermore, we have to trust in God, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We are to thank God for this time in which we live. Thank God for former times because we learn from it. And indeed, the psalmist would encourage the parents to teach their children about yesterday that we may learn from it. Henry Ford, the manufacturer of the car, said, history is bunk. It's not altogether true. Somebody else said, the one thing that we learn from history is that we never learn from history. That's not altogether true, but there's an element of truth in it. And we are, at least as Christian people, to look back to yesterday that we may learn from history. Do not be as they were, because you know what happened to them. And so as you look ahead to the future, avoid that which brought judgment upon them. And learn to be content. I am content to live in the 21st century. I am content to belong to this period in history where God has placed me. And I will plan for the future, God enabling me, that I will live to his glory and to his praise in this day and in this time in which we live, and where the opportunity for us is to spread the glorious gospel, which speaks about a glorious future that is yet to be when Jesus comes a second time. My friends, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Amen.